Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Please welcome to the show this evening, Kelly Fitzgerald.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Perhaps one of the most talented individuals I have met in a long time, my guest this evening, Kelly Fitzgerald, certainly fits that mold. Have you ever met someone in life and wondered to yourself, wow, that person seems to know how to read me like a book without me ever saying a word? These are the mysteries that we wonder about. There are many of us in this world who are actually quite gifted, so much so that it scares other people. And when you wonder about why someone would be so scared to get to know you just because you might be a little bit more knowing than most people, then you wonder why or what it is that makes that situation feel so unsettling. My guest this evening, and of course myself, can perhaps relate to the one factor that we lived with most of our young life. People saying to us, "You scare me." Now think about that for just a moment as I tell you a little bit about my guest this evening, Kelly Fitzgerald. Kelly is a lifelong intuitive. She has always had abilities and gifts which at times didn't necessarily make her fit in with just anyone anywhere. She was able to see, hear, and know things about other people that basically left her even wondering herself how she was able to turn on, but somehow not necessarily turn off, the very gifts and abilities that made her. Kelly learned to embrace the things about her that made her be a bit different than the normal crowd. For many years, she has been using her gifts to help others get information that they need in order to either move forward with their lives, understand their lives, maybe perhaps even connect with the deceased loved one. But regardless, she is able to use her abilities spectacularly and to the best of her ability. She would call herself perhaps more than an intuitive. I would call her a psychic medium with strong intuition, and one where her readings and healings have helped many throughout life. We have a lot to learn about her this evening, so sit back and grab a book. But I have a feeling you're not going to be opening that book to just any one page, because the page that you're going to read about and see this evening is my special guest, Kelly Fitzgerald. Well, good evening, Kelly, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very excited to have you. Kelly and I have a lot in common. She's got a little bit more under her belt than I do, but this is going to be an interesting talk because we're actually going to kind of delve into some of the what are you thinking or what do you think this is during our conversation tonight. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about maybe skinwalker activity that she's been experiencing for quite a while. I think you'll find that to be very fascinating. So, Kelly, what I usually do is, of course, we start out in the usual usual format here. We get the foundation on the guests, see where they started from, evolve it from there. I want you to go back, though, as early as you possibly can remember, and whether it was coming into an awakening or whether or not you were having unusual experiences, how old were you and what were you experiencing?
I was probably about 2, my first memories of this. And I, this was my family, they put the baby in the room that was haunted. So I remember a man just like having horrible breathing trouble. And I don't know if it was his cat, but the cat always came with him. And it was an orange cat that was in spirit form. So those were my first memories. And I just thought it was terribly fascinating. I just, you know, it was no different to me interacting with a ghost cat and a ghost person than it was anybody else. I thought everyone could see them. Mm-hmm. That was an orange cat. Today I have a white cat. But and that cat, the funny thing is that cat stayed with me most of my life. It sort of followed me. I had, and my friends that have known me forever will tell you, I had the same cat for like 40 years because the cat would cross, he would pass, and then within a short period of time, a kitten would be born, and here would be the same cat with the same markings and the same scars from injuries, and it was just bizarre. But it's been my life. It's been my whole life.
That's interesting. The cat that you're referring to, especially with the aspect that when another kitty would be born, it would have the same markings. That in and of itself is a little bit, I'm not going to use the word creepy. That's not really I'm going with it. But, you know, you hear these reincarnation cases all the time, and you've got people having scars and markings and stuff like that in different places that represent different things that might have happened to them in the past. I don't know. Not to get off track for a moment, but I am curious since you brought it up. Do you believe in reincarnation, or do you believe that the energy is somehow transforming itself continuously in that respect? What do you think?
I absolutely believe in reincarnation because I do recall previous lives that I've lived. I do think animals can reincarnate as well. Honestly, what I've been taught from some of my studies from very high-thinking spiritual people is that animals have more advanced souls. So the only reason they would come back is to teach you or to be supportive to you. So I've always kind of treasured that because, you know, if that's true, this cat just wanted to take care of me, so it would keep coming back.
Okay. Let's jump back to your parents for a moment, or those that may have been taking care of you. Yes, it always seems like the baby ends up in the haunted room. Yes, I know. Yes, I know. It's classic. But were your parents on board with things that were happening to you? Did they also have the types of gifts you did? Did they believe in this stuff or not? What was that upbringing like with them?
Well, I never knew my father, so there's that. my mother, I think, was just my hunch, and she will not confirm this, is that she played around with some things that were more of a dark nature and scared herself, so she shut down completely. My grandmother was more, okay, all right, I believe you. Okay, she was just like, whatever, you know, she didn't want to encourage it,
right?
But she was not saying you didn't see that, you know, she was very okay if you say so. So I didn't have that support system, and when I've spoken with other people who have these gifts, that's kind of common, where sometimes people have tried to shut down that person in the family who could see things. I know I got bullied a lot for it. By family members. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got to school, I was like, go ahead, bully me. Because I would tell people things that I could see, and I would just get bullied for it. So I just kind of, okay, I can't tell you, you know, and that's the more I tried to be quiet,
Yep.
the more it was like, nope, right in your face. You have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this. So I started seeking out either a school counselor or a teacher that liked me a lot. And I would kind of confide in them. And through that, I had one teacher, a drama teacher, believe it or not. And she put me in touch with my first spiritual teachers. And it was very hush, hush, secret, secret, because my mother couldn't know, my family couldn't know anything about it. So I think today she probably would have lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, she was critical in how I saw myself, because I felt I was the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
I was the weirdo. I was like, you know, nobody liked me. And it was just people were scared of me. People were afraid of me. I'm not going to talk to you because you'll tell me what I'm thinking. Yeah, I probably will, actually. But those kinds of things were sort of my foundation for being an adult. And if you think about it now, looking back, it's like, why didn't someone help me? Why didn't someone say, here, let's do this? But except for that teacher who wasn't until high school, I had a horrible time.
Well, I can add to that a little bit, just to kind of, I don't know, you don't have to reveal this. I graduated in 1980, but my experiences were in and out and ongoing and passed off as anxiety from the early age of probably 5 all the way up until the age of 18, to the point where I ended up going to a psychologist. I needed one because I went through hypnosis, is why I went there, to try and control my anxiety. But what was probably happening at the time was, you know, growing into my stronger awakenings, because I was having experiences as well. And back in my day, and I don't know, it sounds like it was the same with you. You didn't really engage in that. And if you knew something, and like, I was the same way. I had a strong knowing, but I was also, I turned into myself as an introvert. People remember me to this day as being someone who never talked and who was basically, I don't want to use the word a loner, but I was kind of a loner, and I was befriended by certain groups of people. But, you know, of course, you know, thank God somebody accepted me for just who I was. Never really talked about this stuff, though. Experienced it, right? I understand the bullying part, but to add to you, what made me feel a little bit more comfortable or intrigued was when two teachers were having a paranormal experience inside their home, and they mm-hmm. wrote about it in the school paper. And I felt if two credible teachers could talk openly about their paranormal activity in their home, then I'm not so far off the beaten path with my interest in it. And it was a, you know, this is back in the day with only Ouija boards. We didn't, that's what we engaged in. I've never used one, by the way, but I know people back then that used it as a tool to communicate with the deceased. So you're not alone. There's many of us out there that can relate to feeling isolated, quiet, don't want to be bullied anymore. And by the way, you scare me, or you're probably going to tell me what I think. If they're picking that feeling up from a person, and I've gotten that all my life, even in my teaching days and even in my law days, people just always were afraid of me. I had one manager who asked me if I worked for this is going to be crazy, but it's true. He asked me if I worked for the CIA because I scared him so much. And it's like, really? Oh, thank you. I'm so flattered. But you know what? It's just like, no, I just know things that people don't know. Now, let's get back to you, though. So it's interesting. So yes, we have a commonality of kind of going through our life a little bit and experiencing reactions from people, skeptics, or even people that are like, and of course, that leads us to the next phase. So now let's say you're out of high school, right? And you're moving forward. So now what are you doing with your life, or how are you going into this even more?
Well, I have to back up in high school. I graduated. Well, they tossed me out and gave me a diploma in 1979 because they were tired of dealing with me. I went to five high schools in 4 years, and it was just, I didn't fit in anywhere. And I just would tell people exactly what I thought. And I actually got summarily asked to leave a particular school when a teacher was bullying me in front of the class. Mm. And I was just like, your grandmother says you're being mean to me and she doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see her behind him.
Mm-hmm.
A teacher ended up losing his job because I could prove he was bullying me. But along that line, my family was so disorganized, dysfunctional, traumatic, mm-hmm. dramatic, that I was just looking for a way to get out of that house.
Mm-hmm.
So I got pregnant at 17.
Mm.
So when I was summarily asked to leave high school, oh, here's a diploma. We're just going to get rid of you, okay? You know, don't take another class. I ended up in a very highly abusive relationship. It took me years to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But a funny thing started happening. He nearly killed me and my daughter. And what started happening is I started asking for help. And remember in the 70s, those big chain lamps with the big ball that,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
He was choking me up against a wall and the light started swaying and it caught him in the back of the head. And I was able to get out of that relationship because he was convinced that something was protecting me. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, lots of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had one close friend my whole life. It wasn't the same friend, but I would have one close friend that I could confide in. And that's what I had then. And it was a gay guy. Everybody needs a good gay friend, I think. But he ended up getting very, very sick. And I had moved. When I left that abusive relationship, there was no, I'm moving across town. I tried moving. He was finding me. My ex was finding me and threatening to kill me everywhere I went. And then he would tell me how he was going to kill me. And it was a different way every time. So I was horrified. I was traumatized. I went inside. I lived in my own little world. I communed with my dead friends. And I just was like very, very not okay. But my friend, my wonderful friend who is no longer with us, told me, you need to get out of here. Mm-hmm. I have friends. I have a friend in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Let's go. And I threw everything in the car. Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh, he knows my car. Sold the car, bought another car, transferred the stuff from that car into the next car, and went to San Francisco and absolutely started over my life.
Mm-hmm.
The first three people I met were psychic mediums. I was like, I'm home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just really put me on a path that I was safe. Yeah. In for the first time in my life,
mm-hmm.
it was okay for me to be me,
mm-hmm.
for the first time in my life. So that's when I really started, you know, doing readings for people, studying different healing modalities, mm-hmm. looking into paranormal stuff and doing paranormal investigations. This was in the mid 80s. So I really ended up being a spiritual life coach before that was a thing. People would just randomly come to me. I couldn't walk down the street in my neighborhood without people saying, you can help me. Here, let's talk. Strangers would tell me their entire life story,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was like, I'm home. I belong here. And that was the start, really.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, it was like I was born again,
mm-hmm.
in 1985 in San Francisco. So it was just in 86, I found my voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I can attest to the fact that, let's see, it was in somewhere in the 80s that I started reaching out to psychics. Mm-hmm. One in particular was actually quite good. She was the one who, let's see, the 80s, yeah, mid 80s for me. Yeah, and I held on to her for quite a while, but she was the one who also told me that my mind was very powerful and very strong, and to be very careful how that if I got angry, be very careful how I thought of things because things would manifest. And I just didn't understand her at first. I thought, what are you talking about? I got a powerful mind. Oh, I should be able to make things move. Well, I'm chewing on my words to this day because yes, actually, I can make things move. And yes, some very bad things happened. And I got angry back then, and she was not wrong. And I don't even think, I'm not sure she's still alive to this day, but if she were, I would tell her how she took me to a place in my life. And I'm talking about good psychics, people. I'm talking about credible people that really have their interest in helping you, and they're not out to BS you. And there are, unfortunately, like there's good and bad of everything. Kelly and I both know that, you know, when you have a hit and a good one, it's great. And if you have someone that's not so much, or they're manipulating you or using you, it's not so great. And they give even the good psychics a bad name. But she was the one who warned me of that. But that, when you brought up the 80s, I'm trying to, it wasn't even psychics, when I didn't want to tell anyone I was going to them at the time, or a few, because it was still scoffed at. But in some of them, especially this one, really was really great and stuff like that. So now you're finding peace, a little bit peace. You've got some of your people around you. You're feeling a little bit more accepted. You're feeling a little more understood. And we all want to be there no matter if we have the gift or not, right? Because we all live very different experiences. So then tell us a little bit about how you started to really, I mean, I know you mentioned that you're doing some psychic work, but did you start to try to cultivate this in any way where your gifts came open and more alive? Because you're quite good at your mediumship and being able to talk to deceased and or predict future events. What do you attribute all of this to?
I am very, very in touch with my guides. I live every day of my life in communication with my guides and higher beings, you know, higher vibrational beings. Even when I'm doing a reading, I'm like the microphone. I'm listening to what I'm being told, and I'm just repeating what they said. I do channel from time to time, and it just takes so much energy. I try really not to do a lot of that because it is just really taxing for me. But one of the things I did as an outlet in the 80s is I formed a rock band. I wanted a rock band because I was always writing, and some of my poetry was very lyrical. Mm-hmm. So I just turned them into songs and did that for a while. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting from a standpoint that was another avenue for me to find my people. Yeah. But it was also the 80s. So there was a lot of stuff around that I just really didn't want to be involved in. Mm-hmm. And so I just took a giant step back, said, you know what? I'm just going to keep writing. I will sing to my cat. And, you know, the dog will join in. And I called it a quit. I kept getting very, very sick.
Mm.
And I would have really weird things like mold allergies in my throat. Weird things, you know. And I was getting diagnosed with autoimmune stuff that was just 1% of the people in the world have this issue, and you've got it. So I did some really deep soul searching. And even though it was fun jumping around on stage like an idiot, I had to stop. And a lot of that stuff calmed right down. It was just amazing. It was like so anti to who I was, mm-hmm. that my body was like, nope. So I started doing more paranormal investigating at that point. It was just felt like something I needed to do. You know, it was brand new at that time. I know people have always investigated paranormal things, but in the 80s, there weren't like TV shows doing that kind of stuff.
No.
So to me, it was kind of edgy. And my 20-something-year-old person liked that, you know. So I started doing that. And I realized I had a real big talent for finding paranormal things, and even places that people didn't realize were haunted. I'd drive down the street going, whoa, 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 who was that in the window? You know, And it was just, it's in my blood now. I'm like, I could stop now if I had to.
So you brought up a couple of things that I started noting in myself. Trauma. Trauma is one of the things that I have had in various forms. You don't have to have, really intense trauma to have trauma. It just depends on what it is and how your system or how your brain reacts to it. And I started making a connection about even myself being a beacon, or having more of a light glow around myself or whatever, as to why these things were approaching me. And you brought it up earlier. And once you kind of think, oh, I'm going to step back from this or whatever, then they come at you even more. So you can't win no matter what way it is. So I just accept the fact that I'm going to have something approach me. But I guess my question to you is, you've had a lot of trauma
A
in
lot.
your life. You really have. And stuff that most kids, who knows, most kids haven't been through at such a young age, all the way up into whenever. Do you think that the trauma has reconfigured your brain in a
Absolutely.
way where somehow something has just opened up more compared to most that, because that's what I'm attributing mine to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've also lost a number of people that were very, very important in my life. And there for a while, there were like seven deaths in my immediate circle in 1 year. My brother, my best friend, it just goes on and on and on. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well. I think subconsciously, I was probably waiting for my brother to reach out. Because we were very close, and it just like, you're not on this side anymore. And all of a sudden, one day he was a very pranksterish person. And after he crossed in, I was asking, where are you? I know you're going to talk to me. Where are you? And I was walking outside, and a mesquite bean, I have mesquite trees, fell in my hair. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Pull it down, keep walking. Another one. Then four all at once, and it was like I was being bombarded by mesquite beans. And I'm like, all right, you're here. Cool. But it was that was the first time I heard from my brother. Now he doesn't shut up, he doesn't leave me alone. But on the other side, what I have found is people either find their group immediately, or they're like, yeah, I see you over there. I'm over here. It's one or the other. When my aunt died and my uncle had died previously, I asked her, are you with, my uncle? And she went, no, God, no. So if they didn't get along in life, they're probably not going to get along in death. And that's their chance to say, nope, I'm going over here. I see you, bye. But I think a lot of loss has led to a lot of advancement of my gifts. It's, when you have a loss and a loss and a loss and a loss, and I got sick in the middle of that, did my very best to die. I did die. They threw me back, told me I wasn't done. I'm like, thanks a lot. That also intensified. So, yeah, everything we go through.
You bring up another point about what I'm making dot connection with here, near death experience or actual death being brought back experience. And it seems like a lot of people, or maybe a good portion of them that I either talk to or I've heard about, have had some kind of near death experience where that has also triggered gifts or abilities within themselves. And we're not encouraging people here to go out and try to kill yourself and see if you have an
No.
ability. Please don't do that.
No, don't do that.
But the thing is that there is a connection here between trauma and near death or whatever, or being hit by a lightning bolt, or again, that's still trauma, and stuff, or injury and being recovering from something like that. And so when I am curious, because you do seem to, and yes, it is very exhausting for psychics, psychic mediums to constantly do their work, because they can also get physically sick from doing this type of work. And people don't realize that. They think they can turn it on and off in a heartbeat, and that's not always the case. So Kelly, when you were starting to get good at or better at channeling or having people come to you to tell their, you know, deceased, come to you to tell their story or to want to reach out or whatever, what was your most startling revelation about that? Because, you know, all of a sudden you're probably thinking to yourself, holy cow, you know, and yet you're right on it. Do you remember one of your most startling moments of having someone trying to communicate with you and you're like, you kind of amazed yourself? Any of those come to mind?
I have had where I live, this land, well, I'm in the middle of nowhere for a reason. but this land was very, very occupied spirit-wise. And I would have, when I moved here, I would sit in the middle of my property. There was no house here. There was no nothing here. And I knew I was very, very sick. And my doctors told me I was dying. I was going to die. And this 1980s-ish male spirit like popped up in front of me and said, I'm here. Why am I still here? I'm like, I know.
Hello.
Hi. How are you? What's your name? Nice to meet you. None of that. Why am I still here? And that was when it occurred to me that I had the ability to open the door and let people cross through. And that's what I did. And I knew how to do it. Nobody ever taught me that. I just, how do I do? Okay, this is what I'm going to do. And that was the first of many. And when I started doing that, I was like, holy cow, where did that come from? It was just almost frightening. I almost scared myself because it's like, okay, I can do this now. Cool. What other miraculous things can I do now? But that was relatively recently. I've been here 20 years now.
And the land she lives on is somewhere in, I'm not going to have you disclose where, somewhere, is it in Arizona?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the land there, there's a lot of land there that's very, very occupied. But I was going to ask you a question about that gentleman that popped up in front of you, not to sidetrack you, but, you know, I've been getting reports lately from various individuals who live in various places of actually talking with deceased individuals or being seen in what looks like the flesh, you know, real human being spirit. Right. Have you ever, to the best of your knowledge, have you ever had a conversation with somebody who looks like you and me, right, in the physical flesh, that really was not was not here at all? And you, do you tell us a little bit about that, because that is just how many of us have talked to dead people and we don't even know it.
Yeah, well, I think more than we think, really. I was at a flea market for plants, and I'm like a plant aficionado. I cannot get enough plants. And I'm talking to this woman, and she says, where are you going to plant this? And then we're talking, and she said, well, that won't work, but this will work. Kind of looks like this. And had a whole conversation with this woman about plants. I turned around. I went back to ask her another question. She was gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this woman that was next to me the whole time, I said, where did that woman go? And she said, what woman? You were talking to yourself. I thought you were crazy.
No,
I'm
kidding.
Like, oh, mm-hmm. All right. But she was completely accurate in her plant choices for me. They're still thriving. And it just, I had another experience like that in Hawaii one time. And I've just had, even in the grocery store, I've had one of those experiences. It's just, I was a liaison between nursing homes and their people that had people in the nursing home. And I would go back and forth with them, and I knew this patient had died. Mm-hmm. I'd gone to his funeral. I knew he was no longer on this side. I'm in a grocery store shopping, and there he is. I'm like, we're not having this conversation because people are going to see me and you're not there. And, you know, so it does happen. I think it happens to people more than they realize.
Well, and I know that I've had situations, and I know that even not even necessarily nice, or no, let's say, I'm going to rephrase that. Even in situations where something is under possession and or something, I'm not going to use the word demonic, but something evil has taken over their soul. And I've just, in the last couple of years, especially a situation with a coworker that had this experience and then the person disappeared. And I talk about this show, this black-eyed kid periodically, but also the other black-eyed kid that seemed to be under possession, which I recognized after the fact was from the carnival. But in the situation I was in, this was not a likely situation. It was very bizarre. And so anyway, but yes, there are times when we have to do a double take. And yes, you start talking to something and they're like the crazy person that's talking to themselves. Well, maybe next time you should wonder if the crazy person is actually talking to something that they actually can see, you know?
Right, right.
Very interesting, though. Yeah. So, and do you shut things off? Do you say, like, you know, do you pull down the sign that says, you know, I'm closed for today. I just want to have my day. Don't come and bother me. And do they still tap on your window? What happens with you?
I do try to take a day off. I have some really wonderful, they were very, very close to me. And now they are on the other side, people who do not care if I say I'm not doing this today. And I will have somebody in my ear. Hi. I'm like, I'm here. I'm like, go away. You know?
Yeah, go away.
Yeah, but it does happen. Sometimes, and this is not really off topic, but kind of switching gears. Sometimes after a paranormal investigation is complete, they're telling me to talk about this. I'm not sure why. It is very, very easy to have what I call hitchhikers go home with you.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if you say, nobody's coming home with me. It doesn't matter if you say, I'm closed. They're going to try. So one thing that I've learned to do, even on a daily basis, I do this whether I'm working or not, is I surround myself in protection. I surround myself in a pink bubble that nothing can infiltrate. And I just do that as a daily basis. Because when you do so many paranormal investigations, when you do so many readings, I have one client, her deceased mother-in-law will come and check in with me when I haven't done a reading for her in a month. You know, so you have to do something to protect yourself. And I found wrapping myself in protection works really well. And I still make an announcement at the end of every investigation. You are not allowed to leave. You are not allowed to come home with me. That is so important.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've haunted like three homes or something that's come back with me, or I've said the same thing. You need to stay here. Don't come back. I've had 16 attachments. I don't know how somebody can see 16 attachments on my body that were removed a few years ago. And I had a crazy experience in bed when they were being removed and levitating, opening up the mouth, vomiting a lot of air, which I was vomiting them out. And this was done remotely, by the way, from someone in San Diego. And I could go on for days about what might be on me. But, you know, I'm going to ask that question because this is really, this confuses people. Yeah. I've heard that some of the Hollywood figures or, you know, people that are very very popular, that sometimes they can have as many as 90 plus attachments all over them or whatever. How are you able to determine that? Because I can't feel that stuff. And I'm said, you have 16 of them on you and I'm going to remove them all. And I said, would you leave one, please? I said, the one where I win at gambling when I go to the casinos. Yes. Because I, by the way, I still do win at casinos. And I have for a long time. And sometimes I lose. But when I win big. And I'm like, just leave that one. Everyone else can go. But I'm going to ask you that question. I can't feel them. I can't tell that I've got them on me. How are you guys, in with your abilities like this, how can you determine that?
Usually, it's in your energy field that it shows up. And for me, they show up as little black dots. So you'll have like a black dot in your head or a black dot on your nose or a black dot somewhere. That's how they show up for me. I've had other people describe other ways that they see them. But that's for me, it shows up as a black dot in your energy field.
Interesting. Can you see any on me right now?
No, you don't have any right now.
Oh, thank God.
No, it's to have that many at one time, you've done a lot of investigations. Yeah, that's the only way that happens. But for people, there's a lot of dark things that happen in Hollywood. Really dark things that happen. Not everyone will get an attachment. It depends on how pure your soul is, how bright your light is. Sometimes I have gone into a place where people have told me, everyone that goes in here gets an attachment. So just be prepared. And I go in and nothing. And they're saying, because your light's too bright, the entities that would be attaching cannot go through your light. So that's one thing that I think people that do these paranormal shows need to talk more about, is the importance of protecting yourself, the importance of preparing yourself. Because there are days where I have postponed an investigation because I just wasn't feeling energetically strong enough.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, I want to shift gears a second here. And I want to talk a little bit about kind of where you're living at. Don't say where, but you can be vague about it. I'm always been fascinated with ship shapers, skin walkers. I've heard accounts on people looking out their window, seeing a person walk across the street with it, then turning into some kind of an unusual mountain lion and crawling away. I just had a guy give an interview. He gave an account of a shadow person being an entity, getting down on all fours and shape-shifting into a ball and rolling away. I've heard of things out in national parks, like crazy things like rocks that all of a sudden aren't rocks. They become something and they move themselves, or they turn into all kinds of things. And, tell us a little bit about, you live in a very interesting area, but some of the experiences that you've had, because it's very fascinating.
Well, first off, I think shadow people are their own species. I really do, because they're so prevalent all around the world. I think they're their own species. And just like us, there are good and bad. So just because you see a shadow doesn't automatically mean it's bad. Certainly not meaning it's demonic. Mm-hmm. Not everything is demonic that is paranormal, even the dark stuff. We have shadows around here all over the place. But this area, there were bloody, bloody, bloody battles. Mm-hmm. An entire people was attacked for no reason other than other people wanted their land. And that's kind of where I am, in the middle of all of that. Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very haunted out here. Skinwalkers. I have some close ties to various reservations and various Native First Nations people. And skinwalkers are an inherently Navajo thing. So if you are in the desert Southwest, or at least the Southwest, if not the desert, chances are really high what you're seeing shape-shifting could actually be a skinwalker. They are a being now on the other side who took a shortcut. They were on the path to being a shaman or a medicine man or some spiritual teacher, and they decided they didn't want to devote years of their life. So they went to the dark side, and they went, hey, darkness, how do I make this shorter? And they go, okay, here's what you have to do. And they do a whole bunch of really horrible things, mm-hmm. and then they become a skinwalker. There are many other entities that can shapeshift. Skinwalkers are particularly nasty. In this area, there are numerous sightings of, you see a weird looking, like slumped over person walking, And then all of a sudden they're bending forward more and more and more, and they're on all fours, and they're a coyote running off into the mesquite. That's most likely a skinwalker. I've had some clients in on the East Coast, Massachusetts, New Jersey, telling me about skinwalkers. And I'm saying, no, that's probably not a skinwalker. That is a different dark entity that shapeshifts. A hide behind is an entity that is common on the East Coast, I hear. Never been there, don't really know, but that's what I'm hearing. But not only that, I mean, there are numerous dark entities. If you have a really, really evil entity, it might be a lower level demon. But in all the hundreds now of investigations I've done, I've encountered actual demonic beings very rarely. Mm-hmm. Very rarely. It has happened a couple of times, but it's not normal. You can have very, very evil, nasty things that are shape-shifting, mocking. You have mimics that there was a construction project and there were three people working on it. And there was one guy left the property and yet the other two saw him walking down the hall. Mm-hmm. That's a mimic. It's different than a skinwalker, but it is a nasty, nasty, nasty being.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're out there. They're out there.
You're talking, we talked just before the show, and did you say that you also have had a number of animals being either dumped off and or ghost animals running around that appear to be animals, but then suddenly just kind of disappear? Talk a little bit about that.
Lately, and the first one I'm going to talk about is kind of funny because this dog was here. Mm-hmm. This dog was here. My dogs were looking at this other dog. They could see it. I could see it. It was a dog. I was talking to neighbors who lost this dog. And this neighbor tells me that looks like my dog that died 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, what? It down to the collar. So why was this ghost dog on my property and why didn't he go home? You know, it was weird. But there have been a number of ghost animals that are more wild animals. I have a ghost bobcat that appears every now and then. One dog was dropped off here with a harness on. Somebody dumped this dog with a harness on. And when I think about all the things that harness could get hung up on, it breaks my heart. But anyway, he just appeared and I'm like, who are you? Where did you come from? And then three different people were trying to claim the same dog. And fortunately, I had them all come out one at a time, not all together. And when the dog's owner came out, that was the last one, because I did that purposely. I knew she was the dog's owner. That dog lit up like a Christmas tree and it was running and spinning and, you know, but why would people try to claim an animal that was not theirs?
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, I know I would say it's strange. What's the motivation behind that, or why would they do something like that? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Did they really believe that that was their dog, or did they have, here's the other thing that has gone through my head. Please don't tell me you have any kind of form of dog fighting up there where they would.
We did a while back. I don't think we do anymore.
Yeah.
But this was obviously a trained hunting dog. And my feeling is these other two men wanted another hunting dog. He was obviously very well trained.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But it was weird. It was very, very, very strange.
And probably had no response to them, did it? Kind of like.
No, not at all. It ran behind me with the second guy.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, I don't know you, but you look safer than he does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I can add to that just a little bit for those of you that might be a bit skeptical. When my brother's family dog passed away, it actually appeared. And it appeared to my, how old was she? 3, 4, 5 years old. It appeared to my niece while she was sitting in the bathroom doing her business. And then all of a sudden the dog that had passed away the day or so before peeked around the corner and looked at her in the bathroom, and she saw the dog, and she kept saying, "Come here, come here, come here," you know, and all that kind of thing. And my brother had heard her say that and was wondering what on earth is she saying, or what is going on here. Now, keep in mind, young kids are very, how do I use the word psychic, but visual as well. And so, yeah, so the dog came in, did not go to her, stayed in the doorway, gave her kind of a whatever, turned around, and then as it walked away, just simply disappeared and vanished. Vanished into air. And so that was my first real account of hearing about, and I've heard reports of animals doing their same routines.
Oh, yeah.
Running around the house, something's going on where it acts like the dog is there, nudging hands when people are sleeping and crawling into bed with them. My husband had a ghost cat crawl across his legs when I was not there for the weekend, because the cat passed away in the house 14 years earlier. So they can come back. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on why they come back, and especially so late, you know?
I think they're just checking on us. I had a corgi named Trixie who died, and my daughter was visiting here. And all of a sudden she goes and opens the door, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm letting Trixie in." And she heard Trixie at the door, scratch at the door. And I'm like, "Honey, she died like 3 years ago. What are you doing?" But they do that. You know, my ghost cat, Mo, there's a rug behind that I'm on. And that ghost cat, I mean, sometimes he's done it on camera. He will wad up the rug. And it's just, they do it because they love us. They do it because they're trying to provide comfort. They're trying to let us know they're still around. I kind of feel sorry for anyone who doesn't buy into that, because mm-hmm. of course we are their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they not want us to be okay? You know, I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I have a continuing cast of characters around here because I do an animal rescue, and mm-hmm. I can tell when one of them has crossed over because they'll come and tell me bye. It's mm-hmm. like, "Yeah, I know you rescued me 12 years ago, but hi, here I am. Bye." You know, mm-hmm. it's just, animals are so much more than we give them credit for being.
I had a few experiences from my dad when he passed away, including the sign he gave me when I was in my classroom 600 miles away, but he also visited a few years later. So I know that they can come and visit on occasion or give you a sign. But some people out there are they want a sign. They want to have their loved one visit them or let them know they're okay or just show that there is life after death. And so for those that don't come to visit, I don't know. Are you able to determine why some do and why some don't?
I can tell you what I have been told from higher realms is a lot of the times people are trying to give signs, but the people they're trying to communicate with just aren't open. They can say they are, they can say, "I want this," but when it comes right down to it, they're afraid of it. And if you're afraid of it, you're never going to see their signs. The other thing that I've been told is that sometimes there needs to elapse a period of time between their death and when they have the energy to visit. I found that with, you know, my own brother. It's sometimes it takes them a while to process their life and learn the lessons and process the lessons and all of these things that their soul needs to experience before they have an adequate light body to come visit. There are also those very rare people who are destined to become ascended masters. And if you've got someone who crossed over who is destined to become an ascended master, you may not see them again, at least not for a very long time, because they're going to what I call angel school. They have things to integrate in a different energy capacity
mm-hmm.
than an ordinary person who would cross over and reincarnate and cross over and reincarnate. I do think there are many people on the planet right now who are destined to become ascended masters. Humanity is awake enough. The multidimensional beings have taught us enough that more and more and more people are going that route.
What are your thoughts about earthbound spirits that maybe don't ever leave?
The second thing they want me to talk about is suicide. People in certain religions believe that that means they can never go to quote unquote heaven. That's not true. A lot of times a soul needs to have that experience of ending their own life so that they know what that feels like. That is something that they needed to do. Same thing with stillborn children, with miscarriages. That is something that soul wanted to experience. It's not anything to feel guilty about. People are always, oh, I should have done more. No, that soul needed that experience. They're fine. Their soul is fine. It's not tarnished. It's not damned to hell. It's not any of that. That's simply an experience. And when you look at it that way, I think it eases a lot of pain for, you know, what I call survivors of people who have taken their own lives. I've had a couple of people I've lost through suicide. And the first thing you think is, I should have done more. But you have to understand it was them. It was something their soul wanted to do. No matter how many times you talk someone out of it, it's something that their soul just wants to do.
If people want to reach out to you for either a reading, because I know that you have the ability to do generalized readings or whatnot, yeah. Or find your books. Hold up that one book that you most recent.
The last one that I did last year is a tiny book about energy work. I'm also a Reiki master. I work with energy in a number of capacities, and I just kind of wrote the highlights down in a very, very short book. It's under 50 pages.
Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you, and I'll make sure I have all of this in the show notes at the end so people can go rewind and grab it that way too.
Okay. The best way probably is intuitivemediumkellyfitzgerald.com. Kelly is with an IE. I'm also Kelly Fitzgerald, intuitive medium and author on YouTube. Those are probably the best ways. I am on Facebook and X and all of the social medias too. The keywords being intuitive medium, Kelly Fitzgerald. You can find me anywhere that I'm at.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for being on
Thank
the show
you.
Today.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or ParaX Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, ParaX Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.